We are back. You know, one thing I wanted to mention on our, what I thought very humorous reading, hopefully you thought so too, quotes from the James Nelson article about the Yale Alumni Magazine and Dave Henderson last week. That article originally appeared in Smithsonian Magazine, I believe in March of 1991. And if you can get your hands on that, I think you'll enjoy that read. Joining us now from an undisclosed location, we believe somewhere near Washington, D.C., is White House spokesman Yuri Fleischman. Mr. Fleischman, will you address the issue of the looters trashing the Iraqi National Museum?
Certainly, in the proper context, I will.
Why did occupation forces do nothing as mobs of Iraqis looted the nation's greatest cultural repository?
Democracy involves choices. Granted, that was not a responsible choice by those folks, but it was made by Iraqis, not us.
Well, when begged to stop all the looting, a military spokesman apparently said people were entitled to celebrate their liberation.
Well, they were. We provided several tons of confetti with very detailed instructions in Arabic on how to use it.
Well, aren't celebration and looting fairly distinguishable?
Many troops might have just figured the Iraqis were on a buying spree, you know. Suddenly you're free to buy whatever you want, and they went a little hog wild, that's all.
Yeah, but sir, shoppers don't normally break the plate glass windows in the stores.
Well, accidents do happen. It's all a learning process.
So looting is a part of the learning process in new democracies.
Of course, yes. Looting is little more than frenzied shopping.
Yeah, but since when do shoppers go down the aisles in a museum with crowbars and wheelbarrows?
Well, our people might have thought the gift shop just had a sale going on.
Sir, this is a public relations disaster for the United States.
Oh, bosh. We're so sick and tired of you reporters claiming the sky is falling.
Yeah, but sir, 170,000 priceless artifacts were looted. So for the Baghdad Museum, the sky fell last Thursday.
Our estimates were 160,000. But look, it's their country. I mean, what the hey?
So the U.S. is not to blame, in your opinion, for destroying one of the world's greatest museums.
No. How could we be? I mean, well, how could our GIs possibly get granted wing bulls home to Tulsa? Come on. The Iraqis did the looting. They did it. They're free now, free to do as they please.
To loot?
Well, free citizens have options. We bring the freedom. They choose the options.
Well, as of last Wednesday, ancient treasures that had outlasted invasions by Assyrians, Persians, Alexander the Great, they'd survived conquest by the Romans, the Muslims, the Turks, two world wars, three Gulf wars had not destroyed the collection. Then, suddenly, Thursday, April 10th, these pieces failed to survive U.S. military control of Baghdad.
Aren't you being a little dramatic?
No, I don't think so, actually.
You know, a liberation process is not perfect. If you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. We're sorry to see old clay pots crushed or whatever those things were, but we had bigger fish to fry.
Well, no, sir, you did not. There was no military action diverting U.S. forces that day, and protecting Iraq's cultural heritage was supposed to be a priority.
Our main goal was and is to liberate Iraq, not serve as museum guards.
Well, wrong. George W. Bush's stated goal was to attack Iraq because they had weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that too. But don't think that aiding the Iraqi people was not foremost on our minds.
Foremost.
The highest of priorities.
As high as grabbing the oil fields?
Well, pretty darn close.
So this would explain why there was a company of Marines with a half dozen assault vehicles guarding the oil ministry in Baghdad.
Yes, it would.
But it would not explain why the Baghdad Museum, the cultural jewel of Iraq, the showcase of the Iraqi people's heritage, didn't have a single soldier posted.
Perhaps our boys just couldn't find the building.
It was the first item on every list of Iraqi sites needing protection. It was not protected, sir, with a catastrophic loss to scholars, art lovers, and historians worldwide.
Well, you know, a lot of it will surely turn up on eBay, Douglas. We could just buy it back.
With what money?
The oil money, of course.
That's supposed to help the Iraqis.
Well, it would help the Iraqi people to learn the value of those little cuneiform tablets you media people keep harping on. Let them benefit from a bit of free market economics. Look, Doug, we should focus on the good done in destroying Saddam Hussein's regime.
Okay, so how's the search for those weapons of mass destruction going?
Well, Well, we've not located any enriched uranium yet, if that's what you mean.
Okay, which says no nukes.
And we have not found any definitive bioweapons yet, but rest assured we will.
Well, I have great confidence you will.
I think a lot of this stuff actually may be in Syria now.
The weapons of mass destruction that you haven't found in Iraq yet.
Yes, those. We suspect they're now in Syria. That may explain why we haven't found them in Iraq.
How about the real killers in the OJ case? Any evidence that they're in Syria?
Well, I have no information on that.
And what about Amelia Earhart?
But I do have, Douglas, a scoop on chemical weapons. We've located canisters of application-ready cholinesterase inhibitors known as nerve agents.
Yeah, but they're also known as insecticide.
But we located a cache that our analysts feel cannot be justified by pesticidal needs, both pressure-controlled delivery systems and dispersal precipitants.
Meaning bug bombs and flea foggers. So where'd you find them?
Under the sinks in the palace. It was way more than even a bad roach infestation could justify. They had can after can of the stuff.
So what about the new American military viceroy of Iraq?
We prefer to call him the Director of Interim Ops.
How was he selected?
Secret ballot. And by the way, you may wish to speak to Colonel William Kelly Klondike, the aide-de-camp of the new Commander-in-Chief of Interim Ops.
Is he available?
I can get him for you.
Well, please do.
Well, stand by.
All right, hopefully this will take but a minute. While we're waiting, I should refer you to the forum section of the Bee, which I think's, you know, been doing a very good job of late, or wherever you can find an article by Harold Meyerson about the axis of evil, titled, Now Preemptive Peace, Pentagon to Run Iraq, UN Just a Bit Player. Contrary to the wishes of our British and Australian allies, the U.S. seems quite adamant that the Pentagon is going to run the show in the military occupation of Iraq and whatever sort of government follows it. This article talks about how the Iraqi National Congress is one of six opposition coalitions in exile, that its leader Ahmed Chalabi is a person who's not very well set up in Iraq, but he does have some friends in high places, the leading defense neoconservatives Richard Perl and James Woolsey. All right, so do we have him now?
Yes.
Okay. All right, we're now going to go to the Pentagon. This is, understand, Lieutenant William Kelly Klondike. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I prefer Skip.
Well, Colonel Klondike.
Yes.
How long do you see the military operating in Iraq?
Well, only so long as necessary to install a new leader like Ahmed Chalabi.
Well, Mr. Chalabi's unknown in Iraq, I understand.
Mr. Chalabi has been away for a while, true.
Since the Dodgers were in Brooklyn.
He makes up for this with connections.
Connections to Richard Perl and James Woolsey, we hear.
And to many Iraqis as well.
Why is the administration keeping State Department personnel away from this occupation?
Well, we have all the help we need.
But they have people who speak Arabic.
If we need them, we'll call. The UN, too.
So, who gets to vote for the new president?
We have a panel working on the electoral process. The states, members of Congress, and our judiciary are all assisting us.
Who?
Representative Catherine Harris from Congress. Governor Jeb Bush is liaison advisor for the states. And we have a Supreme Court justice.
Let me guess. Rehnquist.
No, Scalia.
This is to ensure an honest election in Iraq.
Absolutely, scrupulously, yes.
Are Iraqis involved in this electoral setup?
Mr. Ahmed Chalabi has been of great help.
The candidate.
He is a candidate, yes, that's true.
Is helping design the electoral process he'll use.
Well, don't you think he should, Douglas?
Sir, I think the U.S. is just going to appoint him. Why go through the charade of an election?
We think that would send the wrong message. It would imply the U.S. was merely furthering its own interests instead of Iraq's.
Well, we mustn't have anyone suspecting that.
No. That would be foolish.
All right. Well, Colonel Klondike, thank you, and
yes.
Please come again on the show.
Yes, sir. You're most welcome.
Well, we look forward to seeing what takes place in the Middle East. I think that Syria is clearly next. Sometime in the next 2 weeks, we're going to address the issue, which has raised the hackles of a lot of people in Washington that some of our neoconservatives like Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz seem to be closely allied with Israel's arch-conservative Likud party and its current president Ariel Sharon, and that these guys have an agenda to take out people that the Likud party does not like. This is very controversial, but there is some rather compelling evidence that when it comes to Israeli policies, that people like Perle and Wolfowitz are leading rather than following. Allow me to quote from the April 6th article by James Rosen from the Sacramento Bee, Washington Bureau. Most of the controversial book aides are strong supporters of Israel's conservative Likud party, now headed by Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, and several have past ties either to Likud or to Israeli companies. Excerpting ahead, Bush's talk of bringing democracy to the Middle East on a bayonet's edge and making a show of force to other Arab governments echoed longtime themes of both the Likud party in Israel and some of its neoconservative supporters in the United States. In 1996, as Likud Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu prepared to take office, 8 Jewish neoconservative leaders sent him a 6-page memo outlining an aggressive vision of government. At the top of their list was overthrowing Saddam and replacing him with a monarch under the control of Jordan. We reported to you 2 weeks ago, of course, that indeed one of the people on the short list to replace Saddam Hussein is the Crown Prince of Jordan, whose family used to sit on the throne of Iraq. The same family controlled Iraq and Jordan. This is a guy we may want to bring back as we restore democracy. Well, excuse me, established democracy. You'd be hard-pressed to argue that Iraq has ever had much of a functioning democracy. I'd like you to take note of the fact that in my criticism of these men, the fact that they're Jewish is not the key issue. It's their neoconservative policies. On this program many months ago, we did our best to debunk some of the more insidious anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion was one of the more insidious and ultimately ridiculous conspiracy theories of history, and we did our best to tell you about it and debunk. In the case of this issue, accusations are being made that this is anti-Semitism. I don't think it is. Their neoconservatism speaks for itself. This is an important issue, one we definitely want to delve into at some length, but this can't be done today. We just don't have the time. If the neoconservatives get their way, we're going to have a war with Syria, and we're going to have it soon. In the April 14th San Francisco Chronicle, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was quoted as saying, "Who in the world would want to invest in Syria? Who would want to go and do tourism in Syria? The government's making a lot of bad mistakes." Well, in the weeks to come, I will be able to answer at least part of the secretary's question, who'd want to go and do tourism in Syria. I would. And in fact, some years back, I did. I've not been to Afghanistan, the site of the war in 2001. I've not been to Iraq, the site of the current war. But I have been to Syria, the location of the future war, and I'll have a few things to say about that. We very definitely do need a break, so let's take one. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett, and this is KDVS 90.3 FM.